Witch Witch series.
Written by HMS Lusitania. Narrated by Rhea314. Fandom 911. Pairing Evan Buck Buckley, Eddie Diaz. Rating mature. Creator chose not to use archive warnings.
1.
It starts out as a stupid conversation at the station. Jim, overly credulous, kicks them off with a quick, "Hey, remember when we were jinxed because Proby said the Q word? Do you guys think there's such a thing as actual magic?" In his defense, Eddie guesses, it really is a Q word shift, and they don't have anything better to do. Everyone sprawled around on various pieces of furniture in the loft. Eddie had been playing a round of pool with Buck, but if they're going to get into this conversation, he's got to nip it in the bud. "Nope," he says, and taps out an incantation on his cue in Morse code to make sure it hits the ball correctly. It's not something he'd usually do. He'd never cheat at pool normally, with magic or otherwise, but, well, Buck had been getting extra smug about his supposed pool prowess recently, and Eddie needs to beat him now just to mess with him.
"Then how do you explain that shift?" Hen asks.
"Expectation is its own kind of magic," Eddie says. "Y'all got squirrely about it, and because you were expecting everything to go wrong, it did."
He doesn't usually think about magic. It seems stupid when he phrases it like that, even to himself, since, well, Eddie is magic. But that's the thing. Eddie Diaz is a bad witch. Not a bad witch. Not a wicked, "I'll get you, my pretty," cursing people left and right witch. He's just bad at being a witch. His sisters don't understand it, since magic has always come just oh so easily to them. He's the oldest, and they'd still been running laps around him magically since they were all kids. He expects to get better as he grows up. Some people are late bloomers, his abuela had comforted when he'd started spending his summers in L.A., with her rather than in Texas, watching Sophia and Adriana and their mother work magic for everyone else. His own role, if he stayed in El Paso, reduced to restocking herbs and fetching ingredients. But he doesn't. Instead, he stays bad at magic and just covers. He dates Shannon. He doesn't tell her about magic. He joins the army. He doesn't talk about magic with the other witch in his unit. He has Christopher. He doesn't tell Shannon about magic, but now he feels bad about it since Christopher is clearly also a witch. His marriage dissolves. His magic gets even worse some fucking how. And he listens to his parents list all his failings. Bad husband. Although that one they're more than happy to drop on Shannon, so his real crime is having shitty taste in women. Bad father. Bad witch. And he leaves. He's gotten a little bit better since he moved to L.A., although he can't imagine why. But he's still bad at magic, and besides, it's not like he can tell anyone at the 118 about it. He can't be like, "Yeah, I'm actually dead positive that Ravi didn't jinx us, because I would have been able to tell if we were jinxed, since I'm a witch." They don't tell mundane people about witchcraft, as a rule. It tends to end in fire, and as a firefighter, Eddie's got enough of that in his life, thanks. "Oh, come on," Chim complains. "You never, never once ever had a moment where you saw something you couldn't explain and been like, 'Hey, I bet that's magic.'"
"Nope," Eddie says.
He finishes tapping out his Morse code incantation, the one and only magic-related skill he picked up in the army, and sinks three balls with one shot while Buck gapes at him. And he's telling Chimney the truth. He's never had that experience. He's never had to wonder.
"Well, I just saw something," Buck says. "How the hell did you do that?"
"I'm better at pool than you are," Eddie says, and takes a sip of his coffee, and then leaves Buck sitting there, staring down at the red felt. He expects Buck to drop it. Buck's dropped every other blatant act of magic he's seen Eddie do. He ignored burnt dinners that miraculously turned out to be edible. He's dropped the times Eddie's used a tiny little charm to push himself through a long, long 24. He's never even asked about the well. But he doesn't drop the pool trick. "Just tell me how you did it," Buck requests a whole week later. They're out for drinks at their usual Badge and Ladder joint, staring at the pool table. Eddie rolls his eyes, orders another beer, and silently thanks whoever first came up with the idea of rideshare apps.
"It was just a pool game, Buck," Eddie says, unable to keep the fondness out of his exasperation. It's almost uncomfortable sometimes how much Buck sees him, but it's uncomfortable like exhilaration rather than a panic attack.
"Do it again," Buck says, grabbing the cues from the guys leaving the table and forcing one into Eddie's hand. Eddie sighs, takes the cue, and racks the balls. And then, the desire to baffle Buck and impress him gets the better of him, and Eddie taps out his Morse code incantation with just a little more intention this time. He lines up his shot and hits the cue ball. The stripes and solids scatter, bouncing off the bumpers and rolling into each other, and then, one by one, each of the solid-colored balls sinks into the one of the wells, until just the eight ball is left, teetering on the edge of the pocket. Buck and Eddie stare at it, and then, with unnatural slowness, it tips in.
"How the fuck did you do that?" Buck asks, jaw hanging somewhere near his navel.
Eddie grins at him and takes a sip of his beer while he lets Buck reset the table.
"Magic."
"You're not funny," Buck replies, breaking with a normal, completely unmagical pattern.
"I'm a little funny," Eddie says.
Buck shakes his head, but can't hide the edges of his smile any better than Eddie can hide his fondness. When Eddie laughs, Buck starts to laugh too, and then he clears his throat.
"Stop distracting me, I'm trying to kick your ass," Buck says.
"Want to go for the title?" Eddie mutters against the lip of his beer bottle, confident Buck can't hear him. But Buck totally misses the cue ball and looks at him with big, soft blue eyes as inescapable as the fucking Pacific.
"What?"
"I didn't say anything," Eddie says. Buck blinks at him for a second and then turns his attention back to the table, focusing as hard as he can on the game. Eddie kicks his ass. Without magic.
"What about dragons?" Chris asks, flipping through his book.
"Not that I know of," Eddie says, flipping over the pancakes. He's not as good at it as Buck is, but his magic usually cooperates with him when it comes to making the food he gives Chris into something edible.
"That's stupid," Christopher says. "There should be dragons."
"I know," Eddie agrees, because he's pretty sure he had that exact argument with his abuela when he was Christopher's age.
"What about sea monsters?" Chris asks, turning to a new page in his book.
"No idea," Eddie says, "but I don't think we can rule those out on account of no one really knows what's at the bottom of the ocean, right?"
Christopher considers, humming. "What about werewolves?"
Eddie plates up their pancakes and joins Chris at the table.
"There are some curses that can make you look like a wolf, but I don't think anyone's ever been really a werewolf like you mean."
Chris sighs, disappointed, and turns the page again while Eddie adds syrup to their plates.
"What about vampires?" Chris asks.
"Chris, buddy," Eddie says, ruffling his hair. "If there were other human-looking creatures like us, we would have heard about it at some point, I'm positive. And your grandparents would have told you all about the best way to avoid them, yeah? Chris heaves a sigh and takes a bite of his pancakes, and he stays glum all through breakfast. What's up? Eddie asks.
What if they're just as good at hiding as we are?
Eddie thinks back to the bar and the way Buck's gaze had lingered over his hands every time he'd lined up a shot.
I don't know that we're all that good at hiding.
Chris peers at him, but doesn't ask what Eddie means. Instead, they spend the rest of their Saturday the way they usually do when Buck is busy. Eddie does his best to teach Christopher about magic. Magic is all about channeling a desire into an intention and letting the natural magic you're born with take over. It's not about spells and incantations and potions, not really. Sometimes those make it easier. Eddie's tapped out Morse code pool incantation, for example, as well as some of the lullabies parents sing to children, which had even made their way into normal human cultures. And there's nothing wrong with using them to do magic. Incantations and lullabies and potions are great for using magic someone else has crafted. But most witches can just do things in a way that Eddie can't. His dad and his abuela, and even Peppa, have always told him it's because he has issues with his intention. Eddie's always believed them, his whole life, up until recently, when he started actively trying to teach Chris. Because Chris? Chris has problems with intention. It's fairly common in kids, something Eddie was supposed to grow out of. This inability to focus on a particular when they're doing magic. Chris isn't always great at focusing on what he's trying to do, although he's getting better as he grows up. But in watching Chris's magic flow in one too many directions and explode all over things like an overripe berry dropped on a tile floor, Eddie's come to notice that whatever his own issues are with magic, they don't look anything like Christopher's. They might have when he was a kid, when his family elders diagnosed him with issues in this area. But not now that he's in his 30s.
Oops, Christopher says, flushing, and Eddie laughs.
The Lego structure he'd been trying to assemble with magic is still in pieces in the middle of the floor, but a solid half of their coffee table has been turned into plastic bricks.
Sorry, Christopher says. It's okay. I turned my sister's dollhouse into a drum set when I was your age, Eddie says.
Did you play the drums? Chris asks, while Eddie inspects the Lego masonry on the half of their table.
Nope, Eddie says. I just wanted to annoy them.
Chris giggles, and Eddie presses his hand to the table to change it back. It doesn't even shimmer. When there are issues with the intentions guiding your spells, the effect can be chaotic, like Chris changing the substance of their table. But Eddie never produces chaotic effects. His issues are in the other part of magic, he thinks. His issues are all wrapped up in wanting and desiring something, which shouldn't be affecting his ability to change the damn table back to wood, but, well, when has his magic ever listened to him twice in one day?
Dad? Chris asks. Don't worry about it, buddy. We'll get Abuela to come over and do it, okay? Eddie says. Unless you want to try changing it back.
I can try, Chris says. And Eddie lets him, which is how he ends up with an entirely made of Legos coffee table for his trouble, and an exhausted and overtired 10-year-old.
But hey, Eddie says, when he's tucking Chris in. You did so well focusing when you made the other half of the table into Legos, too.
I did? Chris asks, rubbing his eyes and burrowing into his blankets.
Yeah, Eddie says. Are you kidding? We're going to have to fix it, but the fact that you were able to focus well enough to do that much is pretty cool.
Chris smiles and nestles into his pillow a little more. Eddie presses a kiss goodnight into his temple and whispers a quick lullaby spell for good dreams that makes Chris giggle, and then he heads out. When Chris's door is shut behind him, Eddie heads back to the living room to try and deal with the table again. Once more, it stays stubbornly formed of Lego. Admittedly, it does look kind of cool. The variegated colors of the different Lego bricks have formed an interesting, organically random pattern, and none of the colors in them clash with the rest of his living room. It's also held up its sturdiness despite the change in medium, so technically he wouldn't need to change it back to wood to keep it a functional coffee table, as long as they use coasters with hot beverages. They don't even need to worry about the plastic denaturing, although Eddie's pretty sure Lego bricks are tempered in some way to deal with heat exchange, and honestly, that would probably be an easy spill to cook up, and... Eddie sighs and drops back onto the couch. He kicks his feet up onto the smooth surface of the modified table. He can't change the table back to wood because, at the end of the day, he doesn't actually want to. He just thinks he's supposed to want to. He's just thinking about a stupid Lego coffee table, but the idea starts to spiral. How much other magic has he failed at because he was only supposed to want it instead of actually wanting it? How many other things has he stopped himself from wanting because he was supposed to want something else? Buck lets himself in, and when he sees Eddie sitting on the couch with his feet up, he nods in greeting, heads to the kitchen to grab them each a beer, and comes back. He flops down onto the couch next to Eddie and kicks his feet up as well, and it's only once he has got the edge of the table pressed into his insole that he seems to notice the change in material, which Eddie has no idea how to explain. But Buck just stares at it for a second, and then pops the caps off their bottles and hands Eddie his.
"I didn't know you were coming over," Eddie says. "I just tucked Chris in. Sorry you missed him."
"Yeah, it was a last-minute decision," Buck says. He glances over his shoulder toward Chris's door like he's considering how awake Chris may or may not still be, but decides to leave it alone.
"What inspired the last-minute decision?" Eddie asks, taking a sip of his beer.
Buck isn't looking at him. He's staring instead at the space over Eddie's fireplace, almost lost in thought.
"I was thinking about your pool trick." "Oh my god, Buck, seriously?"
"No, I'm just... Hear me out, okay?" Buck says.
"When we were playing pool at the station, you said that expectation is its own kind of magic, right?"
Eddie shrugs.
"And I'm just thinking, what if it's possible that sometimes you can want something enough, desire it enough, that, I don't know, the universe listens to that and makes it happen, and that's what people think of as magic?"
Buck asks. Eddie knows he has a bad poker face. Troubling when one is part of a magical species that's only survived this long by hiding in plain sight. But he does his best.
"Sounds pretty far-fetched," Eddie says.
"I don't know," Buck says, squinting into the middle distance like it'll give him some answers.
"You tapped out 'I want to win' in Morse code on your pool cue every time you took a fancy shot, so like..."
Eddie intends to say something dismissive and subject-changing, but he stalls out with his beer halfway to his mouth.
"You know Morse code."
Buck blinks.
"Oh, yeah, I got bored and picked it up a while ago."
Eddie shakes his head, not nearly as surprised as he should be, and takes a drink.
"I just wonder if maybe you put some kind of, like, I don't know, intention into your pool cue, and that's how you were able to do those trick shots,"
Buck says. Eddie's heart does a complicated flipping thing in his chest. Buck knows. Inconceivably, Buck knows about magic. He knows how magic works. He knows Eddie can do magic. Buck Perfectly mundane and perfect, Buck knows what he is. And Eddie didn't have to tell him about it, the way he'd never told Shannon. And he didn't have to hold his breath and hope. Buck just knows and is waiting for Eddie to confirm it. It does something to his insides, something fundamental and altering, like Buck's tacit acknowledgement has somehow reached down into the core of him and changed him for the better. Maybe even changed his magic?
How did you find out? Eddie asks softly.
Hmm? Buck's hum doesn't interrupt his staring contest with Eddie's fireplace. Eddie rolls his eyes, that inexplicable fondness writ large all over his face, he's sure.
Desire, intention, Eddie parrots. How do you find out how magic works?
A tiny furrow forms in the part of Buck's forehead that Eddie can see at this angle.
I just told you it's my working theory, Buck says.
Eddie lets his knee fall sideways to tap against Buck's thigh. The corner of Buck's mouth closest to him tilts upward in response.
I mean, how did you find out how magic actually works so well? I've never heard someone mundane figure it out that closely before, Eddie says.
The bottle Buck had been lifting to his mouth slips through his fingers for a second. He catches it before it can fall to the cushion of Eddie's sofa and holds it upright, but he turns to Eddie with the most alarmed look Eddie's ever seen on Buck's face.
What? Buck says. What do you mean? Eddie asks, the delightful comfort he'd felt a second earlier vanishing in a flash. Actual Eddie, can you do real magic? Do you know you do real you magic?
Buck splutters. The comfort is replaced with white-hot panic.
You didn't know? Eddie asks.
No? Buck demands, voice rising in pitch. Without Eddie even needing to mention Christopher, Buck glances back in the direction of Christopher's door and drops his voice.
I thought maybe, I don't even know, I thought that maybe there was a chance proper magic existed and you tapped into it by accident. Are you, Eddie, are you saying you're like a witch?
Eddie has no idea what his useless for poker face does. No one's ever called him a witch before, unless it was someone who already knew, someone he was related to, or one of his sister's husbands, or even his in-laws' families, because both Sophia and Adriana had found nice witches to marry from witchy families. Eddie starts and then stalls out. His impulse is to deny it, to say, no, of course he's not a witch. Chris isn't a witch, his abuela isn't a witch, neither of his parents are witches, and there's no such thing as magic. But on the other hand, he's already sort of told on himself. And on the other... Buck looks entranced. Not bespelled, not like Eddie's done anything to him. But he's not asking if Eddie's a witch out of judgment or fear. He's asking if Eddie's a witch with indescribably joyous light in his eyes. He's asking if Eddie's a witch, fully turned towards him on the couch, two long legs folded underneath him so that he can turn his entire body towards Eddie, with one elbow resting on the back of the couch and the other hand on the coffee table so his entire chest is unprotected and open, pointed directly at Eddie. There's that light in his eyes and a bright puppy dog expression on his face, and that initial comfort Eddie had felt when he thought Buck had figured it out on his own comes back because Buck is asking if Eddie's a witch like it's the coolest damn thing he's ever heard in his life.
Yes, Eddie admits. I'm a witch, and so is Chris and everyone else in our family.
Holy shit! Buck says, still all enthusiasm. Oh my god, that's... He pauses to laugh incredulously, and Eddie kind of has to laugh with him. That's the coolest thing ever, Buck says. He keeps staring at Eddie, but his eyes are trailing over his face, fixing on his eyes, tracing the edge of his hairline, following the curve of his lips, down his throat and to his chest, like he's searching for some kind of tell, some marker.
Wow, can you show me?
Show you what? Eddie asks.
Magic, Buck says. Please?
He turns his best puppy dog eyes on Eddie, and Eddie has time to know that he wants nothing more than to comply before the entire living room changes. It starts in the corner by the door and ripples around them like an illusion. At least, Eddie hopes it's an illusion. And then Eddie's living room is gone. They're not sitting on his couch, facing each other anymore. They're on a white sand beach at night, somewhere far from LA because the night sky is clear enough that the Milky Way is bright above them, spanning out in every direction as far as the horizon. The jungle at the edge of the beach rustles softly in the warm breeze, and the ocean laps at the other edge, lit up with bioluminescent plankton. Instead of the couch, they're sitting on a picnic blanket, the only real things that have come with them to this illusion. God, Eddie hopes it's an illusion and he hasn't just teleported them somewhere. Are their beers. Buck gawps around at the illusion, the only illumination around them, the stars and the plankton in the water, and then he's jumping up from the picnic blanket and peeling off his socks to run and stick his feet in the water. Eddie laughs, still able to see Buck's delight despite the dimness around them.
Is this real? Buck asks.
I have no idea, Eddie says. I've never done anything like this before. Honestly, I'm kind of bad at magic.
Except when it comes to pool, Buck points out, bending down to trail his fingers through the glowing water.
The desperate want to beat you trumps whatever else is wrong with my spellcasting, Eddie says.
Why? Buck asks.
I don't know, Eddie says. Because it's something I actually want, I guess.
You want to kick my ass that badly? Buck asks, splashing in the surf for a second and then coming back to the picnic blanket, exhilarated.
Something like that, Eddie says. Kick Buck's ass, show off and preen. That, for sure, is the difference in intent rather than desire. The desire is the same in either case. Get Buck's wholehearted attention.
This is Eddie, Buck says, lying back on the blanket to stare up at the stars.
Eddie leans back onto one elbow so he can see them better and keep an eye on Buck's face while he does it. The Milky Way glitters in Buck's eyes like he's the one with magic.
Eddie, you're magical.
Yeah, Eddie admits. And it feels warm, and comforting, and terrifying. Buck starts, still at a loss for words. After a second, he lets his head loll sideways on the blanket so he can meet Eddie's eyes. The Milky Way is still glittering in Buck's, and Eddie wants to get closer and count the stars in his eyes, but he doesn't.
260 years I've been alive, and I had no idea witches even existed.
Eddie smiles because there's witch light in Buck's eyes, and Eddie didn't even put it there himself. He wants to lean in, to see it as close as he can, and he wants, he realizes, to taste Buck's smile, which is... And then what Buck's just said sinks in. It hits him the same second it hits Buck, because Buck scrambles to a sitting position while the illusory beach fades back to Eddie's living room around them. And then it's just the two of them, facing each other on Eddie's couch, wide-eyed, and Eddie's voice breaks a little when he asks,
"You've been alive for how many years?"
2.
So, yeah. Buck's a vampire.
"You've been alive for how many years?"
Eddie asks, voice breaking just a little. Eddie, magical, amazing Eddie, who'd just turned his entire living room into an illusion, Eddie, who's a witch, and Eddie, who's the first human Buck's ever felt he needed to tell about being a vampire. Which he has, now, sort of, and entirely by accident. Buck says, 266? Eddie just blinks at him for a second, uncomprehending. What does that mean? Eddie's always known more about genre movies than Buck has, so he figures all he really has to do is... He lets his fangs slide into place and awkwardly smiles so they pop out over his bottom lip. Eddie stares wide-eyed, a furrow in his forehead. And then he leans forward across the couch and presses his index finger against the edge of Buck's fang. When it proves to be firmly attached to Buck's skull, he leans back, blinking. Why did my finger just go numb? Venom, Buck says. Sorry, it's a topical numbing agent. I don't remember that part of Dracula, Eddie says without missing a beat. Yeah, the movie's got a lot of stuff wrong, Buck says. Maddie almost went to England to read Bram Stoker The Riot Act when the book came out. Eddie blinks again. Maddie's a vampire. Yeah, Buck says. She turned me, actually, back, You're physically the same age you were when you were turned, Eddie asks. Buck nods. And if you combined 200 and... Isn't that like the Revolutionary War? Buck nods again. Eddie considers, and on the whole, Buck thinks he's taking the vampire thing really, really well. How many wars have you fought in since then? Eddie asks. Buck awkwardly scratches at the side of his nose. I thought you said that if you had a medal, you'd never take it off. Eddie says quietly, when he has correctly interpreted Buck's awkwardness to translate to most of them. I don't have any, Buck says. It's the one thing we're not supposed to do, right? Draw attention. But I guess you know all about that part, right? Because Eddie is a witch, and witches exist, which is just... 200-odd years, Bucks thought they were totally alone. Humans, vampires, maybe ghosts, and that was it. What else do the stories get wrong about vampires? Eddie asks. Like he can't help himself, even though Buck definitely doesn't have him in thrall or anything. He leans back across the couch again and sticks his finger through the slight part between Buck's lips to touch his fang again. It's not that Buck's never considered the possibility of Eddie's fingers in his mouth, but it definitely wasn't like this. Oh, Buck mumbles, at which point Eddie realizes what he's done and scrambles backwards on the couch, roughly the color of beetroot. Sorry, Eddie says, and Buck can hear the way his heart rate's kicked up an embarrassed, slightly panicked response. That was sorry. Buck snorts. You really want to know? Eddie nods, enthusiastic. So, it was the Revolution. Buck starts. It was the Revolution, and he was fighting for independence from Britain. And a cannonball hadn't hit him in the leg, but it had exploded the wall beside him, and he wasn't going to survive. His regiment had taken him to the field hospital to die, and he'd been horrified to learn his nurse was his sister. Buck had made some off-color comment about Douglas back then, presumably being on the side of the British. So what was she doing in an American field hospital? And Maddie had explained that Doug was dead, and she'd made her own choices. And then she'd explained exactly what Doug had done to her when they got married, so that they would be together forever. And, well, Buck had been 26 and dying, and didn't want his sister to live forever alone, so he'd taken the offer. Vampires are harder to kill than they'd initially assumed back then. So you definitely drink blood, Eddie says. Yeah, Buck agrees. But you can go out in daylight, obviously. Garlic?
Garlic is a total myth, Buck says.
Well, not total. We have stronger sense of taste and smell and hearing and sight. I'm not sure about touch sensitivity, but the other four for sure. And so when there's garlic and stuff, it's just...
Really overpowering? Eddie asks.
Buck nods.
What about, like, do you sleep in a coffin? Do you sleep at all?
Dude, you've seen me sleep in a bed, Buck says. Eddie points at him in acknowledgement.
Although I need a lot less sleep than humans.
He considers.
Although I guess you sleep less, too.
No, I'm not supposed to, Eddie says.
Sometimes I use spells to keep myself awake during a long shift.
Useful, Buck says, and then he has to laugh. Holy shit, that's so cool.
Eddie smiles a little bashful.
So because she turned you, is Maddie your vampiric mother?
No, Buck says. No, she's just my sister. That whole myth about vampire families and stuff got started because it's like common courtesy to hang out with someone who you turn and teach them the ropes, and sometimes you make a family, but most of the time you don't. I mean, it's basically just being a blood donor, and you don't go out and befriend the people who receive your blood from the blood bank, right?
Wait, you've donated blood, Eddie says. Because all conversations about vampirism do generally come back to blood.
Buck's had that go very badly in the past, although not this century.
Eddie's just the first human he's wanted to tell, not the first he's ever told.
Yeah, Buck says. We invented blood banks. All of them have one of us on staff. My blood gets screened out for use for general population, and held in reserve if a vampire's ever lost a lot of blood. Sometimes it's easier to heal with a transfusion than with a feeding, but you can't do a transfusion with human blood.
Because you turn back? Eddie asks.
No, Buck says. No, this is a permanent state. Because it's like using saline instead of blood.
Eddie nods like that makes sense, and Buck wants to ask him more about magic, but Eddie has more questions first.
So do you actually have super strength? Eddie asks.
Yeah, Buck says. That one's true.
Eddie narrows his eyes like he might challenge the idea, but before Eddie can try to contradict him, Buck moves. He's also faster than humans. Or witches, apparently, because he has Eddie up off the couch and over his shoulder before Eddie can say, I'd still take you. By the time he finishes the sentence, or rather lets it die on his lips, Buck has him in the air, and they're not in Eddie's living room anymore. They're back on that magical beach.
Okay, Eddie says, voice muffled because his face is pressed against Buck's back. I won't challenge you to an arm wrestling contest anytime soon, then.
Buck sets him down on the picnic blanket, and when Eddie sprawls out to stare up at the stars, Buck copies him.
So you don't age, Eddie starts. Does that mean you have to move around a lot?
Yeah, Buck says, and swallows past the lump that reminder puts in his throat. They hadn't stayed in Pennsylvania once Maddie turned Buck, on account of everyone in his unit thought he was supposed to be dead. Instead, they'd gone to New York and had stayed there for about 10 years before they learned to their horror that Maddie's husband was not dead like they thought. With possibly the worst timing they'd ever had in Buck's long, long life, they'd gone to Paris. Paris in the 1790s was not precisely a great place to live, but it had been in Paris that Buck had met the first person he'd fallen in love with and had to leave behind on account of what he was, and the second, and the third. It would turn out to be the recurring theme in his life, Buck falling in love at the drop of a hat, and then either having to leave because he didn't age,
or because the person he loved figured out what he was and got scared, or because the person he loved died. Maddie had always been more content to study. It was common amongst vampires to go into long-lasting fields of study. Science, particularly medicine, for easy access to food sources, and also because the numbing agent on their fangs was beneficial to patients, and because their heightened senses made illnesses easier to detect. But also astronomy. The times they'd done university study, Maddie had done medicine as soon as women were allowed, and sometimes earlier, almost every time. Buck had always preferred astronomy, since it meant he got to travel away from big cities and was excellent at celestial navigation, and all that led to a much more romantic conversation with a potential partner. After Paris, they'd gone to England for schooling, Buck's alone at the time, but then they'd met up with others of their kind for the first time since they left Pennsylvania.
"Chris is going to be so excited," Eddie says, resting his arm behind his head and staring up at the stars. He looks wonderstruck, but Buck doesn't know if it's because of his own illusions, or if it's somehow, impossibly, because of Buck.
"Because you figured out this illusion spell?" Buck asks. Eddie pokes him in the ribs.
"He's always asking me about other creatures, or if it's just us. I told him it was just us, but you're a vampire. He's going to be thrilled."
Buck's pretty sure his heart is going to melt into goo in his chest, which is impressive considering his average resting heart rate is somewhat less than one beat per minute.
"You're not, I don't know, you're not worried I'm dangerous?" Buck asks.
Eddie snorts.
"What? No."
It isn't a new idea, the one that flits through Buck's head. It's the impulse to show off, to show Eddie exactly how fast and strong he is, to have his fangs pressed to Eddie's throat before Eddie can blink, and then just take the smallest taste of his blood from the vein right over his heart. It's not a new impulse, but it's the first time he has to actively restrain himself from doing it. It's a little concerning, though, because it's not an impulse he should even have towards Eddie, or any human. But, well, Eddie's not exactly...
"Even though I survive by drinking human blood?" Buck asks.
Eddie pokes him in the ribs again, and lets his head fall to the side to look at him. In the dark, lit only by the stars overhead and the soft glow of the plankton from the water, Eddie looks like magic personified.
"Yeah, you do," Eddie says. "But I'm not human."
"I'm pretty sure I could still hurt you," Buck says. Eddie snorts again and looks back up at the stars.
"No, you couldn't."
"You might be a witch, but you're still soft and squishy and full of nourishment someone like me could use as food," Buck says.
"I'm a vampire, Eddie. A vampire could definitely hurt you."
"A vampire, sure," Eddie says. "But you couldn't." Buck blinks back the sudden surge of emotion. Eddie thinks Buck could never hurt him. Or Chris, because he's Buck, and because they're Eddie and Chris.
"Come on," Eddie says.
He stands and offers Buck a hand to pull him to his feet. The beach dissolves back into Eddie's living room around them, and he checks his watch.
"We've got 6 hours until Chris gets up and wants to know everything about vampires, so we've got to figure out what parts he's actually allowed to hear when he's 10. I'll make coffee."
"With the coffee maker I got you?" Buck asks, trailing after Eddie into the kitchen.
"Weren't you born in the 1750s? Shouldn't you think that thing's possessed or something?" Eddie replies.
"Hey now," Buck says, hopping onto the counter while Eddie puts coffee into his distinctly not Hildy coffee maker. "I might technically be 2.5 centuries old, But you're definitely still the old man in this relationship.
He only realizes he said relationship instead of friendship when every single drawer and cabinet in Eddie's kitchen opens and shuts at once.
Yeah, yeah, Eddie says, rolling his eyes and continuing to make coffee. Hey, is the reason you're so weird about technology because of your magic? Buck asks.
Eddie opens his mouth like he's going to say no, pauses, and then stares off into nothing. The nothing happens to be in the direction of Buck's thigh, and Buck tries his best not to read too much into that.
Do I just not like technology because it does what I'm supposed to be able to do and have never been able to do? Eddie asks.
Buck shrugs.
Why do you think you're bad at magic? Eddie cuts himself off and shakes his head. It doesn't matter right now. What else about being a vampire?
Vampire society had turned out to be pretty dissimilar to human society when Buck and Maddie had found it in England. In the old world, there were families of vampires who'd bonded together via marriage or choice, rarely because of blood. And that was normal enough, but there wasn't really any hierarchy. Most vampires had been around long enough to have come up with enough wealth to sustain themselves and their families. And even the extremely elderly ancient vampires didn't have any more sway over people than the younger did. It was too much of a headache, and besides, they were all unified by a single purpose. Find an easy and inconspicuous way to get food and avoid discovery by humans who would want to do them harm. Vampires who tried to do anything else, like leverage their abilities for fame and glory, tended to find out the hard way almost immediately exactly how much humans liked that. Buck and Maddie had returned to the United States in the mid-1800s, intending to make their way west and set up for a while in a frontier town as medical support, and move through settlements after a few years to escape notice for the fact they didn't age. There were 1,000 ways to die in the West, so it would be easy enough to claim fever or animal attack and dig their way out of their shallow graves in the dead of night before moving on. Of course, they hadn't made it farther west than Ohio before war broke out. Buck's regiment had fought for the North, the Union, and to his surprise, there had already been a handful of other vampires in it. The four of them had banded together, taken the more dangerous assignments, but their human comrades had eventually noticed something was different about them. The first thing they'd noticed was that Buck and one of the other men had been spending time together, and that they were prepared to turn a blind eye to, so long as they kept themselves to themselves. But then one of the others had been caught feeding, and their human comrades had employed that most useful and infallible tool to dispatch them, fire. Buck had never gotten a medal for his otherwise meritorious service in the Civil War on account of being technically a deserter. He and Maddie hadn't caught back up with each other until the 1880s in San Francisco.
Buck! Christopher exclaims when he gets up and finds them both in the kitchen. Are you going to make us pancakes?
We had pancakes yesterday, Eddie protests.
Yeah, but Buck's pancakes are better than yours.
I've had more practice, Buck says, and Eddie grins at him over the top of Chris's head.
Yeah, because Dad's a terrible cook, Christopher says.
Hey now, that's one place my magic always agrees with me, Eddie says, ruffling Chris's curls. Chris's eyes go wide and he looks between Buck and Eddie, alarmed. It always lets me fix the things I burn.
Dad, Chris whispers.
It's quiet enough that if Buck had human hearing, he wouldn't be able to pick it up.
I thought we couldn't tell people.
Good thing I'm not people, Buck says, getting the ingredients for pancakes out of Eddie's cupboards. He can eat human food, it just doesn't have the same appeal or effect.
You're not? Chris asks.
Nope, Buck says.
Are you a witch too?
Chris asks, eyes lighting up.
Better, Eddie whispers. He's a vampire. Chris gasps, and Buck obligingly pops a fang over his bottom lip for proof. I thought you said they didn't exist, Chris says, turning to frown at Eddie.
I didn't know, Eddie says. I thought they didn't either until Buck told me.
See? Christopher says, bubbling with a surge of triumph that sends a wave of jubilant magic through the kitchen and turns all the appliances on for just a second. I told you they were hiding just like us.
Yeah, buddy, you were totally right, Eddie admits, kissing the top of Chris's head.
Buck, Chris says, in his best approximation of an adult's, we're now having a serious conversation voice. Are you older than my dad?
Buck laughs. Yeah, by a few centuries.
Chris nods while Buck mixes together the batter for the pancakes.
If you're that old, Chris says, still in his serious voice, what can you tell me about dragons?
San Francisco is a big enough city that Buck and Maddie are able to stay there for several decades without being noticed. They don't leave until the 1906 earthquake and fire, and then they head east for a while. They go to Chicago and go back to school, just for something to do. It's the one time they both do medicine, and it turns out to be convenient timing, because when the Lusitania sinks May 7, 1915, Buck joins a group of American would-be soldiers and heads to Europe. It's the only time he serves in a war as a surgeon. He tells himself, 20-odd years later, when he's heading back to France, that it's because he's got a heart and he can't bear to stand in the surgical tents and operate, even when his vampiric senses tell him he's got no hope in saving those wounded men unless he turns them into vampires. But it's not that. The truth of the matter is, there's another vampire surgeon he encounters. He only encounters the man at a distance, but that distance is far enough. Whatever Maddie thought had killed her husband back during the Revolution, well, it hadn't.
What are you doing for Halloween? Buck asks, leaning against the lockers at the station while Eddie finishes doing the fixings on his uniform.
Chris is going to go over to Hen and Karen's so that he and Denny can go trick-or-treating together. Make sure they swap out the candy they each like and the other doesn't, you know. Ensure the most beneficial candy haul, Eddie says, his face an entire mask of fondness towards his son.
So, I don't know what I'm doing. Handing out candy and watching horror movies? Why, want to come over?
On any day but Halloween, Buck would say yes. But this is the first Halloween he's had off in a few years, and...
So, there's a party, Buck says.
Eddie can't hide his quick grimace, because Eddie is a total introvert, but Buck pushes through it.
Very exclusive, invite only, and it's a formal masquerade ball type party. I know the guy who hosts it, and you should totally come with me.
Eddie finishes with his uniform and lifts his eyebrows at Buck.
Know the guy, like...
Eddie has oddly pronounced canine teeth for a human. Well, non-vampire. And he presses one obviously into his bottom lip.
Yeah, Buck says, trying not to laugh. It's fun, I promise you'll have a good time. Wouldn't it be weird that I'm there, even though I'm not like you or the host? Eddie asks.
Nope, Buck promises. He hasn't brought anyone to one of these balls since the 50s, but everyone else usually brings at least one guest, so he's always been the outlier.
The only requirement is that you're in the know and that you, you know, dress for a masquerade.
For a second, Eddie hesitates, and Buck is somewhat comforted to know that the hesitation is about the otherwise alluring prospect of sitting home alone on his couch, rather than from any sort of fear of the alternative Buck's offering.
Okay, Eddie says. Okay, sounds fun, I guess.
Buck grins.
Cool. I'll let Jim and Maddie know you're coming too.
He leaves the locker room, heading for the stairs and the enticing smell of breakfast Bobby's cooking, and only gets a few steps before Eddie calls after him, "Wait, Chim knows?" After the war, the big one, Los Angeles turns into some sort of gravitational matrix for vampires. Buck and Maddie end up there, as do several of the buddies Buck made during the war, and several of Maddie's friends from the war and school and the suffragette movement. And Los Angeles becomes downright friendly to their kind, to the point that when the old world families get tired of the upheavals and disruptions throughout Europe, they come to Los Angeles too. There's a whole system in place by the time the 1950s roll around. Vampires don't run anything. Running things draws attention. But they've got people in all the important places, and it's easy to get new documentation for people when they have to go and start over fresh somewhere for a decade or two to avoid detection. It's one of Buck's war buddies, from both the first and second, originally from an old family who sets up the Halloween masks. They become an annual tradition among all vampire kind, not just in Los Angeles, but all over. The Hollywood Halloween masquerade is usually the first greeting a vampire will make back to society after a time away, to introduce their new persona and make sure to catch up with old friends. They're a social creature, vampires, and vampire society is close-knit, which is why scandals and upsets can rock their society to its core. Which it does after Buck and Maddie decide to take a spell apart. Maddie wants to go back to Pennsylvania, while she parts from Los Angeles for this next period away, to try and track down their family history and see if anything remains of the original Buckley family they'd come from. Buck decides to spend his time wandering, all over the U.S., down to South America for a while, and when he comes back, he joins the Fire Academy, becomes Buck instead of Evan, meets the 118. Meets and loses Abby in the blink of an eye. Just another name to add to the long, long list of people who have broken his heart. When Maddie comes back to LA, she's worried and trying to hide it. But in his heart, deep down, Buck knows. They haven't talked about him since they left Pennsylvania in 1782, but he knows she knows Doug's still alive, and she must know that Buck knows, too. The story that gets around to the rest of the 118, to their human friends in LA this lifetime, is highly abridged, of course. But no part of it is so abridged as this. When Doug takes Maddie and he stabs Chimney, Buck doesn't get to him in time to stop the bleeding. Chimney very nearly bleeds out in Buck's arms in the courtyard of Maddie's apartment building, and Buck? Anyway, vampire-on-vampire attacks are absolutely verboten, anathema to all vampiric society. Even if he had survived Maddie this time, which he had not, Doug would have been cast out from society and made an example of. Part of Buck, a deep, dark, vengeful side he's never once given voice to, wishes it had gone down that way. In the end, it doesn't matter. The important part is that Maddie is safe, Doug is dead, and Chimney? Chimney's the youngest vampire in L.A. Buck's only regret about inviting Eddie to the masquerade is that he can't actually pick him up and drive him there himself. Buck had previously offered to go early and help with coordinating the decorations and everything well before Eddie even found out he was a vampire, and he can't exactly back out. Buck spends his afternoon directing the tables of champagne and bartenders who are going to be in charge of mixing drinks and making sure they are very well versed in asking whether a person ordering a drink wants it regular or house style with blood. And then he has to borrow a guest room to change into his masquerade costume. They're less costumes these days than they are very nice suits and gowns with dramatic masks. Buck's gone blue this year, with a blue suit almost as light as his eyes and a blue mask that covers most of his face, but not his fangs. It's a vampire ball, after all, and it does cause low-level discomfort to have your fangs retracted all the time. Nothing he can't deal with, of course, but if he doesn't have to, why would he? By the time he's dressed and ready, a good portion of the guests have already arrived.
Buck finds Maddie in the crowd in the ballroom almost instantly. She's gone for green this year, in the sort of skirts that were popular when they were in their human lives.
"Ooh, I like that color on you," she says when he reaches her.
She fusses with the lapels of his jacket and straightens his tie clip, and then lightly whaps him on the chest when he laughs.
"You leave those things uneven just to mess with me, don't you?"
"You like fixing them up," Buck replies. "Why would I go out of my way to make it so you don't have to?" Behind the pretty green mask adorned with peacock feathers, Maddie rolls her eyes.
"All right, here we are," Chim says, joining them in a more traditional and classy black suit, although he's accented with a purple and gold waistcoat that matches his mask.
"And I got you one too, Buckaroo."
"Thanks," Buck says, accepting the drink Chim offers him. It's house style and a good filling beverage to start the evening with.
"Hey, have you guys seen Eddie yet?"
"Eddie?"
Maddie and Chim chorus confused.
"Yeah, you know Eddie Diaz?"
Buck replies, deadpan. It's a pattern of speech he definitely picked up from the man in question.
"Firefighter with the 118, about 6 feet tall, drop dead gorgeous."
Maddie and Chim don't have time to do more than give him annoyed looks because they obviously know who Eddie is, because someone clears his throat behind Buck. The trouble with the ballroom is that it's crowded. It's crowded and everyone smells familiar. And even though Eddie's scent sticks out more to him under basically every circumstance, his nose is still playing catch-up, and it doesn't get there fast enough.
"I'm drop-dead gorgeous," Eddie asks. And yes, he sounds amused. But there's also something else lingering behind the amusement, and Buck has no idea what.
Buck replies, turning to greet him properly. His plan fails instantly, though, because Eddie is...
Well, Eddie is a lot more than drop-dead gorgeous. The suit he's wearing is all black, as is the shirt he's got on under it, as is his mask, and Eddie is...
Buck doesn't actually have words for it, despite the fact that he knows more than a few languages after the life he's had, except that he feels compelled to wrap himself around Eddie and hiss at anyone else who gets too close, even though he's known every vampire in this room for a minimum of half a century. It's an instinct. A deep instinct, and not one Buck's felt before. But the second his head clears enough for him to think about it logically, he knows what it is. He knows what it's always been when it comes to Eddie. It had just seemed impossible because that instinct just didn't kick in with humans. But, well, Eddie's not human.
"Eddie," Maddie says, jumping into Buck's too long pause, openly confused despite her mask.
Chim, on the other hand, has retracted his fangs too fast and is now suffering the vampiric equivalent of the world's worst ice cream headache. Buck winces sympathetically.
"You don't have to do that, he knows," Buck says.
"What?" Chim asks, pressing his hand against his upper lip to try and alleviate the pressure.
"I know about vampires," Eddie says. "Isn't that a requirement for being here?"
Maddie nods and smiles widely enough that her own fangs stick out.
"I'm glad Buck finally told you."
"It wasn't," Buck protests. But she just fixes him with a look, and Buck takes a pouty sip of his drink.
"Does he know I'm a vampire?" Chim asks, letting his vang slip back down.
It won't help the headache he's got, Buck knows that from experience, but it'll feel better in the long run.
"Well, if I hadn't before, I do now," Eddie says, and Chim grumbles.
"Also, yeah, Buck told me."
"Hey, in that case, since you know about vampires now, you have to give me a better answer," Chim says, waving over a waiter and grabbing a drink to give to Eddie.
Eddie sniffs it cautiously.
"All the house-style drinks have to be picked up from the bar,"
Buck says. There's more than a few human guests, don't worry.
Eddie nods and takes a sip, keeping most of his attention on Chim. But there's something fizzling around him, like the effervescent bubbles in champagne, and Buck has no idea what. Magic?
What do you need a better answer for? Eddie asks.
Do you think, now that you know vampires are real, that maybe there's also just even an outside possibility magic exists too? Chimney asks. Eddie laughs, and the fizzling aura around him gets farther from his body. It gets far enough to hit Buck, and it feels like bubbles and giggling in sunlight.
Chim, I'm a witch, Eddie says.
You're a what? Chim and Maddie ask in unison.
We don't know you guys exist either, Eddie says. Everyone in my family always just said vampires were stories. And Buck had no idea what I was until I told him the other day.
Wait, so you do know that Proby jinxed us that day? Chim demands.
Eddie laughs. No, I know for a fact that he didn't.
Chim heaves a dramatic sigh, but before he can ask another question, Eddie's eyes catch on someone in the crowd and go wide.
Is that?
He starts, trailing off like he can't believe it. Our host for the evening, Maddie says, and sips her drink rather than answer Eddie's next inevitable question.
You guys know...
War buddy of mine, Buck replies. He and Maddie have done this routine recently with Chim, after all.
Which war? Eddie asks.
Buck pauses. Chim hadn't asked that part. It takes him a second to remember.
Several? So when he played Jonathan Harker...
We don't talk about that, Chim says, apparently. Eddie just keeps staring for a second, and it makes that weird growling sensation come back to Buck's chest, low enough that only the vampires closest to him can hear it. Which means Maddie can hear it. And Maddie looks at him alarmed, and then at Eddie, and without another word, she grabs Buck by the arm and drags him from the ballroom.
I'm fine, Buck protests, while she manhandles him out to a balcony.
The mansion the ball is being held at is up in the hills, and the balcony has a sweeping view out over the LA Basin, all lit up and twinkly for the night. It's almost as pretty as the illusory beach Eddie made them.
You are not, Maddie says. When did this start?
Nothing started, Buck says.
Evan,
it hasn't. We're not even dating. I haven't even kissed him, let alone tasted his heart's blood, Buck says.
Maddie narrows her eyes, scanning him for some sign he's lying, and finds none.
But you want to, she concludes.
Buck takes a deep breath.
It's wrong, right?
I mean... Have you ever heard of a mating instinct kicking in with a human? Maddie asks.
Buck shakes his head unnecessarily.
Even with Howie, I didn't feel that until after you'd turned him.
Yeah, but Eddie's not human, Buck says. And I've never even heard of witches, let alone the mating instinct kicking in for them.
But you're sure that's what it is? Maddie asks.
Buck snorts and folds his arms on the balcony railing before he drops his head on them.
I'm not sure about anything. I haven't felt this in the dark in centuries.
When Maddie doesn't answer, Buck lifts his head back up just in time to see her slip back through the balcony doors to the ballroom, trading places with Eddie. She closes the French doors behind her.
Are you okay?
Eddie asks. He takes his mask off and sticks it in the pocket of his jacket so the ribbons hang out and flutter in the soft breeze.
Yeah, of course I'm okay, Buck says. He leans back against the railing and tries to seem like it, but based on the look in Eddie's eyes, he fails.
It's stupid.
Vampire thing? Eddie guesses.
Yeah, Buck says. Hey, do you guys have a different physiology? Like, are you weirder than humans, too?
Aside from the fact that our blood separates into blood and magic, and that we can move things around with our thoughts and change the substance of things and cast illusions and curse people? No, pretty normal.
Eddie says. Buck laughs.
I wonder what that tastes like, he says without thinking.
He hears Eddie swallow, and then he undoes the second button on his shirt. He might almost be getting better airflow, cooling off, especially when he also leans back against the railing on his elbows, and it pulls the collar open more.
Buck can see his pulse jumping in his throat, just fast enough to say he's a bit nervous.
You could, he says, and takes a bracing sip of whatever golden beverage he's got.
You could try it. My blood, I mean.
Buck's pretty sure the noise that comes out of him is at a pitch that can only be heard by dogs and bats.
Don't, he says, taking off his mask so he can more comfortably grind the heels of his hands into his eyes and block the distressing sight of Eddie offering his own throat up from his mind.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to...
No, I know, Buck groans. It's not...
Is it weird to drink from a friend, or like...
We aren't friends, Buck says. And then, a beat of silence later, horrified, rushes to add. I mean, obviously we're friends, or of course we're friends. You're the best friend I've ever had, and considering how long I've been alive, you know, that really means something. It's just... There's this stupid mate instinct that's only supposed to ever kick in around other vampires, but apparently it's all non-humans, and I've just been ignoring it for a while because it didn't seem possible, but you're not... We're not friends, and I can't just taste your blood because I'm more than in love with you, and tasting a mate's blood is... It's like renewing your vows every night, and...
The railing of the balcony rolls against his spine, and Buck almost goes backwards over it with the force of how hard Eddie's just tackled him into a kiss. It takes Buck a second, longer than he cares to admit, to get with the program, but in his defense, Eddie is kissing him. Eventually, he does get himself together enough to wrap his arms around Eddie and firmly pull him into the space between his legs. Eddie grins against his mouth, against his fangs, and lightly brushes his tongue against Buck's, which sends shivers down his spine. And then Eddie's tongue brushes against the point of one of Buck's fangs.
Why isn't my tongue going numb? He mumbles against Buck's mouth, not willing to get far enough away to enunciate properly.
The glands that make the numbing agent are up in the place our fangs retract to, and mine have been out for a while, Buck says. They're like where your sinuses are, and you kind of have to dip your fangs back in every once in a while, like a quill in an inkwell. This cannot be sexy to hear right now.
Eddie laughs into Buck's mouth and kisses him again, and again, and there's definite purpose when he drags his tongue against Buck's fang the next time.
You can taste me, he offers quietly, and Buck nearly falls apart on the spot.
Did you miss the part where I said that was like the vampiric, more permanent equivalent of marriage?
Buck mumbles. But he does kiss down to Eddie's jaw and down his throat. And maybe he nips lightly at the spot below Eddie's ear, but not enough to break the skin.
Our version is the witch's kiss, Eddie says. And he sounds out of breath from Buck kissing and nibbling along his neck.
He buries one hand in Buck's hair and makes a waving motion at the French doors back to the ballroom. Buck follows the motion with his eyes, and he assumes Eddie meant to close the curtains and give them some privacy, but instead the doors turn to a stone wall that matches the exterior of the rest of the mansion, and that's followed by a sudden appearance of a padded bench that Eddie steers him towards.
Buck lets it take him out at the knees, and then he's got a lap full of Eddie Diaz, which is something he's wanted for much longer than he cares to quantify. "What's a witch's kiss?" Buck asks, cupping the back of Eddie's neck so he can kiss him again. Kissing Eddie is everything Buck ever thought it would be, and then more on account of the magic that's sizzling through him. "It's supposed to be this ritual that married couples do," Eddie says, shifting a little in Buck's lap in a way that makes them both groan. "A kiss to your partner's third eye, and it's supposed to give you insight into what they're feeling all day and show you what they feel for you." Buck almost laughs, but Eddie shifts again. "The, thing with tasting your mate's heart blood is basically that," Buck says, and doesn't stop himself from brushing his thumb over the muscle of Eddie's chest, burning hot beneath his shirt. His heart's racing, and Buck wants to press a kiss against it, tell it this is all okay, but somehow he thinks that might have the opposite effect. "You know, depending on where you drank my blood from, we could probably do it at the same time," Eddie says. Buck startles from the staring contest he's been having with Eddie's clothed peck and searches his eyes. His question must be plain because Eddie cups his face and kisses him gently. It's been almost 250 years since Buck last considered dying, but he thinks he could die happy if Eddie kissed him gently every day. Eddie rests his forehead against Buck's and lightly brushes the tips of their noses together. "I'm more than in love with you too, you know." Buck cautiously retracts his fangs. Eddie doesn't kiss him again, but he does guide Buck's hands to the buttons of his shirt. Buck obligingly fumbles with them until enough of Eddie's chest is bared that he can get a good shot at the vein over his heart. He lets his fangs slide back into place, pressing the ends of them lightly over Eddie's skin. Eddie inhales sharply, his bottom lip brushing against Buck's forehead, and then they both move at once. The skin and muscle on Eddie's chest gives way to Buck's fangs without argument, and the taste of him is like nothing Buck's ever encountered. It's not just the magic, although he can actually taste the magic in Eddie's veins, and it tastes like the first sunlight after an eternal winter, but it's also the continuous pulse of, "I love you, I 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 love you," every time Eddie's heart beats. But then Eddie's lips press fully against his forehead, and the magic explodes around them. For a second, Buck feels like he's caught in a kaleidoscope for all the fireworks that may or may not be real sparking to life around them, as Eddie's magic seems to burst through some dam inside him. It releases some pent-up decades of power that Buck can taste on his tongue in Eddie's blood, and then they're not on the balcony anymore. They're not at the mansion. They're not in L.A. Buck isn't entirely sure they're even in North America. But they are on that beach. And they're really there. Buck may have about a week of experience with magic, but he can tell. He does have heightened senses, after all. Whether or not the beach had actually existed before Eddie willed them there, that he couldn't say. Eddie says, looking around at the scene that is decidedly not a party in the Hollywood Hills. The real beach has some things the illusion hadn't, like a house with the doors standing open as if to welcome them inside, and Buck can make out the edge of what might very well be a king-sized bed. "Oops." "Oh well," Buck replies, laving his tongue over the bite mark on Eddie's chest and cheerfully undoing the rest of the buttons on Eddie's shirt. Eddie laughs and pulls Buck's head up so he can kiss him properly for a moment. Buck expects that his own tongue must still taste of Eddie's blood, but he's not expecting Eddie's to taste like that same fizzling, bubbling golden magic he'd felt around him at the start of the ball. "Just oh well," Eddie asks, going easily when Buck steers him back towards the beach house. "We don't know where we are or if I'm going to be able to actually get us back tomorrow, and you've just got, oh well? I'm 266, Buck reminds him, content to simply pick him up when they get to the stairs, rather than making Eddie walk up them backwards. Eddie nods seriously and keeps undoing Buck's buttons. I'm pretty damn good at playing Calvin ball by now. Eddie snorts and then kisses him again, and Buck's done a lot of things in his life and kissed a lot of people, but he's never, ever going to get tired of kissing Eddie. Wait, did you say tomorrow? Buck asks, dropping Eddie onto the bed and shrugging off his shirt. Eddie nods and pulls him in for another kiss, and then down into the bedding with him. Tomorrow. We can figure everything else out tomorrow, together. Buck smiles. I like the sound of tomorrow together. And they do. The end. If you enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.
Happy Halloween. Hope you enjoyed it.